In Juneau, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with your local and statewide news update. Juneau officials are poised to approve millions of dollars in pandemic relief tonight. That includes a program to pay households up to $2,000 in rent, mortgage, or utility relief by the end of the year. KTOO's Jeremy Shea has this preview.
Grants funded by Federal CARES Act money on the table for public hearing and final approval at tonight's special Juneau Assembly meeting include $3 million in residential rent, mortgage, and utility relief. Eligibility would be limited by household income, among other things. $2 million for local business grants. $1.7 million to the Juneau School District for technology, losses related to lower enrollment, and distance learning expenses. $384,000 for a destination travel marketing campaign. And $175,000 to fund a pilot program for COVID-19 testing and monitoring for local workplaces. Juneau Assembly has an end-of-year deadline to spend the city's share of CARES Act money. Assembly has already spent or committed about three-quarters of the $53 million the city is entitled to. In non-CARES Act business, the Assembly is also poised tonight to grant $2.3 million to the Glory Hall for its new emergency shelter and soup kitchen near the airport. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
The Assembly continues to meet by video conference. Tonight's meeting begins at 5:30 p.m. You can follow it live at ktoo.org, on our airwaves at 104.3 FM, and on the city's Facebook page. Instructions to participate in the public hearings are available at juneau.org. And don't forget, municipal elections are underway now through October 6th by mail. Go to ktoo.org/elections for candidate profiles. A tribe here in Southeast Alaska has won permanent protection for the site of an historic Tlingit village whose descendants claim centuries-old ties to Glacier Bay. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, complex negotiations secured 150 acres that had been eyed by commercial developers.
Berg Bay lies on the western shores of Glacier Bay, made famous to the outside world by the writings of 19th century naturalist John Muir. But centuries earlier, it had been a major Tlingit population center. Then huge ice sheets forced its inhabitants to relocate south to Chichagof Island to what's now modern-day Hoonah.
It has a tremendous cultural significance to the Hoonah Tlingit, and more specifically to the Tucanidi clan.
Bob Starbard is tribal administrator of the Hoonah Indian Association. He says much of the site is encompassed on a 150-acre parcel that was an original native allotment belonging to the St. Clair family. In 1980, most of the land around it became a national park. And 2 years ago, the family put the acreage up for sale. The asking price, $1.7 million. Starbard says the tribe had to act.
We knew that there were some development interests on the part of the lodge owners interested in developing, and that was a use that we felt was incompatible with both the tribe's interests, the clan's interests, and the park's interests.
But financing such a large deal proved difficult. The National Park Service was also interested, but the federal agency found that the asking price exceeded what the government considered fair market value. That's when the Conservation Fund got involved. It's a Virginia-based nonprofit that buys land and deeds it over to agencies for conservation.
There was quite a bit of head-scratching early on about how we were going to accomplish this.
Brad Micheljohn is the fund's Anchorage-based Alaska representative.
But we heard clearly from the park that they wanted to find a creative way to make this happen because of the history of the use of the park by the folks from Hoonah. So there was a pretty concerted effort to be accommodating.
The fund partnered with the National Park Foundation, another nonprofit with a similar mission, to buy the property outright for an undisclosed sum. It's since deeded the 150 acres to the federal government to be added to Glacier Bay National Park and Preserve. But that's not the end of the story.
The tribe will get special access.
Philip Hoogie is the National Park Superintendent. He authorized inking a formal agreement codifying special rights for the tribe to gather plants, fish, and build a smokehouse and other cultural structures for ceremonies.
Glacier Bay was the homeland of the Tlingit, who were driven out by the ice moving out of the bay. And it's been a long road to return that sense of homeland and to have the Park Service recognize that.
Formal plans will be worked out between the tribe and Park Service each spring, and it's unlikely anything will be built soon. The grassy valley and 2,200 feet of beach along Berg Bay will be for both tribal members and park visitors to enjoy. Bob Starbird, the tribal administrator, says the area has a bond to Huna's Tlingit people that predates modern civilization, and it's something to celebrate and share.
We're not necessarily offended by visitors as long as they respect our rights and history there.
No hunting will be allowed or commercial activities. But according to the terms of the conservation easement, the Huna's tribe's special rights are, in the document's legalese, forever. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
It's been a hard season for small fishermen in many parts of Alaska because of economic losses caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. But as Aaron McKinstry reports for Alaska's Energy Desk, a seafood donation program started by a Sitka organization is helping bring some stability to fishermen and consumers during an uncertain time.
It's starting to drizzle as I step off the dock at Sitka's Eliason Harbor and follow Jackie Foss onto her and her husband's gray and blue 40-foot troller, the Axel.
You land your fish here, you clean here, and you ice and store them in these totes before you put them down in the hold.
For most of the season, it's just Foss's husband and one crew member trolling southeast waters for lingcod, coho, and king salmon, while Foss runs the business shoreside. This was their ninth season commercial fishing, and it wasn't an easy one, mostly because of the pandemic.
So we're low volume, high quality. And so typically restaurant markets, a lot of the fish goes out whole and fresh. And with the collapse of the restaurant industry, there was no market.
They also worried that even if they could sell their fish, they wouldn't be able to get it processed if facilities closed down because of coronavirus outbreaks. And the pandemic disrupted Asian markets, a relationship that was already strained because of tariffs and counter-tariffs between the U.S. and China. At the start of the season, the price for lingcod was half of what it was last year. The Fosses didn't know if they'd be able to operate. But they did operate, thanks to a seafood donation program started by Linda Bankin at the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association, or ALFA.
I very quickly heard about people who were struggling here in town, and that catalyzed us to start talking to local fishermen, local processors, about how we as commercial fishermen could help meet that local need.
Normally, ALFA is a membership organization that advocates for sustainable fisheries and small fishermen. They also run Alaskan's Own, a community-supported fishery that sells seafood boxes to people around the country. But Bankin and her partners decided to branch out to meet the local need brought on by the pandemic. They used grant funds to supplement the price of lingcod so Sitka fishermen like Foss and her husband could start their season with some security. Then they created a market for the seafood by delivering it to families who were struggling to make ends meet because of the pandemic.
It's just a particularly difficult time for people, and then to be able to have really good quality food coming from Alaska's healthy oceans. It's just a really special time to be able to provide that and make those connections.
Soon, Bankin started getting calls from other communities asking her to expand. With the help of outside funders and organizations, they delivered seafood to military families in Alaska and to tribal communities in the Pacific Northwest. Then came the news about poor salmon runs. Southeast Alaska had the worst commercial fishing season for salmon in 44 years, and sockeye runs in Chinook Bay on the Alaska Peninsula failed altogether. The program brought salmon from Bristol Bay, where the salmon season was strong, to Chignik. And most recently, they partnered with Sea Alaska to bring nearly 50,000 pounds of sockeye to tribal households in several remote Southeast Alaska communities. Teodola Silva works for Angoon's tribe, the Angoon Community Association. She helped organize the donation for her community.
Fish was very scarce this summer, so just receiving this 8,000 pounds from these organizations was just a very generous opportunity for us, just so that we have enough food supply for our winters.
The donation was personal, too. Silva was worried she wasn't going to have enough salmon to make sockeye dry fish this year, but now she will.
I'm also really excited for this week because I know that there's going to be a bunch of smokehouses running, and that's my favorite smell in the world. It's just the smokehouse smell, and I'm excited for that.
The program will continue distributions through the winter in Sitka. Bankin says if they get support from the USDA and other funders, they can expand and continue connecting fishermen with communities in need. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Erin McKinstry in Sitka.
Don't forget, municipal elections are underway now through October 6th. Go to ktoo.org/elections for candidate profiles.